right now, it's time for History Matters. Taking a look back at this week in history with the one and only Scott Washington, historian extraordinaire, joining us here in the studio. How are you?
You know, I could say the same thing about you, Aaron.
You could, but I said it about you first, so.
Well, it's a good day. It's a good week, and the first week of December, the holiday season.
Yes.
Are you in the spirit of things?
I'm starting to get in the spirit of things. I don't know how the snow on Sunday is going to affect that.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be kind of gray and slushy and nasty, but there's snow going to be falling. So that's usually conducive to getting you in the spirit.
Well, it feels cold enough now.
It certainly
it?
Does, yeah.
Well, there's a couple of things happening. One is something that is celebrated primarily in Bavaria and Germany, along with the holiday Krampusnacht.
Ah, yes.
Which is this little impish character that accompanies Saint Nick and I think takes care of the kids who are not doing well.
Yeah.
But that's one of those things that, again, it didn't translate. We get the reindeers. We get the jolly Saint Nick.
Yeah.
But there's been a change. All the traditions that we associate.
I guess it's kind of like the Grimm fairy tales, right? Like the original versions of the Brothers Grimm tales are just dark and twisted, and there's a lot of death and horrible people experiencing horrible things. And we get kind of the sanitized version of that, which is still, you know, kind of dark and twisted, but not quite as. And then, like, the Santa Claus story, like we get the guy on the Coca-Cola bottle,
right?
But the legend of Santa Claus, the original legend, is very Eastern European.
Yes.
I think is
well,
is
you
a good
get Saint Nicholas. Certainly, that comes from like Asia Minor, and then you get Sinterklaas
in the Netherlands.
Which, that again, this is very interesting.
And in between, they deal with Krampus, which is what is Krampus? This is like this kind of impish elf who like is like the version of Santa that leaves coal in the stocking.
Exactly.
Like that's what we get.
It
but
was the
Krampus is a little bit more twisted than that, and I'm very happy that Krampus does not visit America.
Found something this week about that that related. I mean, as you know, all these things are developing. We said, well, of course we have this, but supposedly this is the week when the first Christmas cards were created in England by a fellow John Calcott Horsley on December 9th, 1843, featuring a family feasting with the words "Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year to you." I don't know if that's really true, but I think that's around the time that you have Dickens starting to note kind of
a Christmas carol. Pretty significant
tradition. So.
It's interesting because like every country has its own tradition for or its own beliefs about what Santa Claus is, and no one has ever seen Santa Claus in the flesh. Like he comes at night and leaves gifts and
I know.
I keep
waiting
so,
and then I fall asleep and then the next morning there's presents.
We get the image in our heads of what Santa Claus looks like, but we haven't seen him. So
we might be
right. The Germans might be right. Sinterklaas might
That's
be more
right.
accurate.
You never
one
know.
Of these days we're gonna find out.
We'll just have to find out later, won't we? Who was that?
Was that your Santa Claus? I'm trying to figure out.
Well, anyways, there are some other things happening. December 6th, 1933 is when the first photo claiming to be that of the famous creature we know as Loch Ness was published in the Daily Express. And sure, that's still a matter of great debate. And they've had lots of expeditions and things like that. Also today, December 6th, is when the Washington Monument was completed.
Finally.
It starts in 1848, and then, of course, we have the Civil War. But there's this big gap when it's just simply they leave it uncompleted due to lack of funds. Now, I didn't know all that part. I thought, oh, well, because we've talked about Mount Rushmore and find out about this was a little bit unusual.
It starts in 1848. It's finished in 1884. There's that long, like, 30-year stretch when it just kind of sat there half-finished waiting to be done, and that had to have been the most depressing... Not a tourist driver at all, monument.
Yes.
But you can see it now. If you go to Washington, D.C., the difference in color between the bricks that they use for whatever material it is they use, a third of the way up, it's a slightly different color because I think what is the story? I think when they finally got around to finishing it, they had to get the rock from a different quarry, or the marble from a different quarry. So it's a slightly different color. And you can tell if you look at it close and you're looking for it, you can see that gradation between the first rock and the second.
Well, I'm guessing the people who had to work on it recently because of the earthquake damage, they probably got a firsthand look. And maybe they scrawled, something. I was here.
Kilroy was here. Yeah. The first time I ever saw the Washington Monument, I was doing an internship in D.C., and that was the year that they were completely renovating it. So they had whole thing shrouded in that blue scaffolding.
Oh, yes.
And that was gorgeous.
Oh,
I mean,
yes.
Everyone in Washington was like, let's just leave it like that.
Exactly.
That looks
great.
Wrap
it every time so often. Yeah. I think that makes a lot of sense.
Do a Christo project every 5 years.
Well, it was modern art, which reminds me of one of the great stories that happens this week. And it is about the Cohn family. And if I can find where I put it, yes. Okay. Well, now, this is a fellow, unfortunately, there's a sad hook to it, but on December 8th, 1908, this pioneering textile entrepreneur, Moses Cohn, died. And he was relatively young, 51. He's buried in Blowing Rock on his large country estate. Well, this isn't the big thing. And they operated these wonderful Cohn mills. But the really interesting thing is his sisters, Claire Bell and Ella, who were these younger sisters, and they had money and time, and the older brother said, just go, you want to go to Paris, that's fine. So they did. And then while they're this is the turn of the 20th century, they kind of take a hankering to all these what we call modern artists, Picasso, Matisse, and they start buying their stuff up and quietly putting it in their apartment, then buy the apartment next door, do this. Okay, World War I goes by, World War II goes by, the Cohn sisters finally die, and they bequeath it to the Baltimore Museum of Art, and it must have been like Tutankhamun's tomb.
Oh, God.
And here's all this art, and it's just every
hanging
single inch.
Everywhere.
Just dab against each other. And it's just fabulous. When they did it over here at the National Museum of Art, they tried to recreate a little bit of what that must have been like, and it was just dazzling.
Yeah. You hear about it, and these apartments still exist, I think, in New York City with where they're rent controlled, and you keep the same rent as long as you stay in the same apartment. Yeah. So there are people who just live in the same apartment for decades.
Right.
And then when they finally die or move or pass on or pass the apartment on, someone finally opens the door who's not that person. And for the first time, you see how this person lived for the last 50 years, and it's incredible.
Well, and that's a great thing about history, the people who save it by collecting things, believe it or not. Sometimes I'll be asked about that. Well, gee, what do you think about auctions? I said, oh, it's wonderful. People are loving this stuff. They're collecting it, and it's passed down. And eventually, some of it makes its way into the public realm.
Yep.
And that was like a time capsule. And
that's
I'm not
cool.
sure that some of those great priceless works would have survived two world wars were it not for these women, the sisters of this Cohn entrepreneur, which is really an interesting
Some of them wouldn't exist anymore.
That's right.
At least. Yeah, definitely. Speaking with Scott Washington, this week in history, what else you got?
Okay, well, certainly on a more serious note, of course, December 7th will be Pearl Harbor Day.
Right.
Remember that day in 1941. And that's one of those kind of benchmark days. We were reminded this week, of course, with the funeral of George Bush. Senior, and how he fought in World War II. Just a reminder that, those times came and brave people stood up. And I think that's something that we should at least note anyways.
Yep, absolutely.
Because that's important. Yep. Let's see. All right, the other one, this is the kind of a fun one. And that is, let me see if I can find it. The fellow who we can be thankful for, inventing frozen, if you go in your freezer and you get like frozen vegetables out, Clarence Frank Birdseye was born on December 9th, 1886.
All right.
And he created a way of deep freezing foods, which is just, we just take it for granted. Like, but of course there's refrigerators, all those things that,
ice boxes,
that weren't really possible before then. People had to do pickling and all kind of other things to survive winter months. But that just, if if we have bad weather like they're projecting this weekend,
right.
Everybody runs to the store.
Quick, what are we going to do? Buys things, takes them home, puts them in the fridge.
Freezer.
Yeah. That must have been a revelation the first time because, I mean, people pickled vegetables.
Right.
And that's how you kept them through the winter. That's how you could eat. But that means you're just eating pickled vegetables for months. It had to have been such a revelation when, for the first time, you could sit down in January and enjoy a non-pickled dinner.
Well, like we've talked many times, well into the 21st century, 20th century here in America, it was much like camping, you know, in a lot of part of the world. And even down in Walt Disney World, they'll do an exhibit where it's all in dark, and then there's just suddenly this brief moment where suddenly things are in light because you have electricity and lights up, at least in some parts of the world. Not at all, but certainly that makes a huge difference. Refrigerators, electricity, you know, things we take for granted.
Right, right.
Like radio.
There you go.
Like the magic of WCHL.
So, Birdseye invents frozen vegetables.
Yes.
And when he was born in 1888. Oh, he was born in 1888.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So
that happened in the... into the 1900s.
He's born in 1886. He lives to 1956.
Right.
So he, you know, spans an incredible time. And you think of all the things that are going on. We have two world wars that happen, and the difference food preparation makes, how plastics are introduced, a huge amount of technology that occurs during this time. But there's also something else that happens this week. I can't let this day go by without mentioning that today is also a day when Georgia, by ratifying the 13th Amendment, makes the 13th Amendment become part of the Constitution, abolishing slavery.
Yep.
And also this week also is when, on December 4th, 1865, when North Carolina actually voted, and it's just 10 days later, which is kind of interesting to realize how important these are.
Yep.
In fact, and here I'm going to give you a little plug, December 15th, is Bill of Rights Day.
Oh, that's right.
And
yeah,
we'll be doing our
around.
Annual Bill of Rights community bell ringing over in Hillsboro.
Nice.
Right in front of the old courthouse at noontime for as many seconds as the Bill of Rights has been in effect, which is this year, 227 anniversary. So this will be the 227 seconds we'll be ringing bells.
So, and this is, and I know we'll talk about this next week too, because we'll be closer to the day. But but everyone just invited to show up at the courthouse, bring a bell to ring.
Bring any size and any age, doesn't matter. I've had car keys. One time a car drove by with dark tinted windows and stuck out the hand and rang the bells and then drove off. My first drive-by bell ringing. So it's a great thing to do. And when we celebrate these first 10 amendments, where this is like ground zero, Orange County, and certainly Hillsborough, by virtue of the 1788 convention that compelled Congress to take up this issue, these issues where British colonists become American citizens advocating for these rights that are more than just amendments. They're the deepest yearnings of the human heart.
And for that reason, history matters. Scott Washington,
as
always.
This is so good.
No, we don't rehearse this. We're just that good. Scott Washington, thank you so much.
Thank you, Aaron, as always.